Just going to take a quick break from the show, everybody, to tell you a little bit more about one of my favorite things in the world, Audible. Audible lets you enjoy all of your audio entertainment in one app. You'll always find the best of what you love, or there's new stuff to discover all the time in Audible. Incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to new releases to celebrity memoirs, mysteries, and thrillers, motivation, wellness, business. They got it all here in Audible, and you can have it all too. Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, including Small Town Murder, Crime and Sports, and Your Stupid Opinions, with highly anticipated new releases and next listen recommendations to habituate every type of thriller listener. And you can keep your heart rate up month after month with this pulse-pounding collection you can't hear anywhere else. The true crime stuff they have is amazing. Right now, what I'm listening to is The Family by Ed Sanders, and it is a full, complete retrospective on the Manson family, kind of all of what they were doing to set their weird stuff up. It is amazing and incredibly detailed. Great stuff, and there's so much more on there. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog, including bestsellers, new releases, latest stuff. You got it. It's all there. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/smalltownmurder or text smalltownmurder to 500-500. That's audible.com/smalltownmurder or text smalltownmurder to 500-500.
Now back to the show.
Small Town Murder fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show early and ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite Small Town Murder episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free, and you'll always be the first to catch our latest episodes, so you can brag to your friends. But that's not all. You can listen to your other favorite shows like Morbid, Mr. Ballin's Medical Mysteries, and Dr. Death ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Pardon My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means. Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening to Small Town Murder ad-free, go to amazon.com/smalltownmurder. That's amazon.com/smalltownmurder, or download the Amazon Music app for free. It's just that easy.
Looking for a fun and relaxing way to unwind? Download Two Dots, the free puzzle game with over 5,000 unique levels. Connect dots to solve colorful puzzles and collect rewards. With different gameplay modes like scavenger hunt and arcade, there's always a new adventure. Don't want a game alone? Connect and engage with the larger Two Dots community to match up your skills. If you're looking for the perfect game to help you relax but also keep you engaged, download Two Dots for free on Android and iOS.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Small Town Murder Express.
Yay! And choo-choo!
Oh, yay indeed, Jimmy. Yay indeed. My name is James Petragallo. I'm here with my co-host.
I'm Jimmy Wissman.
Thank you, folks, so much for joining us all aboard the murder train. Let's get away from the station here because holy hell do we have a crazy story for you today. As usual, and man, this is just wild stuff. So before we get to it very quickly, just want to say shutupandgivememurder.com is where you get tickets to your live shows for the rest of the year. We are May 5th in Detroit. We are May 6th in Pittsburgh. There's a bunch of sold out shows in July. And then August, we are at August 12th. We are in Chicago.
Right.
Let's make it the biggest show we've ever done, everybody. Let's get in there, Chicago.
I love Chicago.
We can't wait. Chicago's been our bread and butter always. It's the first place we ever did a live show. We have a real special connection to Chicago. And this show here today is only about an hour away from Chicago, too.
Oh, great.
Things always seem to revolve around Chicago for us. It's very strange. So thank you, Chicago. ShutUpAndGiveMeMurder.com is where you get those. Also, get all the rest of them. Philly, D.C., Charlotte, Atlanta, Dallas, all that shit. Get in there.
It's all there.
Get your tickets right now. And also, Patreon.com/CrimeAndSports is where you get all the bonus material.
Right.
Anybody $5 a month or above, you're going to get, first of all, the whole back catalog, hundreds of episodes of bonus stuff to binge, and then you're also going to get new episodes every other week, one Crime and Sports, one Small Town Murder, and you get it all.
Yes.
This week for Crime and Sports, what you're going to get, we're going to talk about some owner criminals, some team owners who got into some law problems because, we pick on the players for, seven, eight years or so. So why not get in on the owners, too? And then for small town murder, we are going to talk about love after lockup, baby.
Yes!
It's love after lockup time. Oh, I love it so much. Every six months or so, we have to catch up with these people, tell you about their lives, and make it so you'll feel much better about your life. Hearing about their lives, because every single one is a disaster. You'd think one of them would be like, wow, doing great. Nope, never happens.
Even the ones that get it together and seem to be building, they fall apart. They trash.
That's right. So that is Shut Up. That's patreon.com/crimeandsports is where you get all that. And you get a shout out at the end of the regular show. And make sure, because it's going to be in May, it'll be coming out. Your Stupid Opinions, our new show. Can't wait for that. It's going to come out on Monday mornings, we've figured out. So it'll be out on Monday mornings, and it'll be sometime in May. So we'll give you an exact date, probably maybe next week we'll work on that. Right. So thank you for checking that out. That said, let's get into this, Jimmy, because holy shit, I think it's time to sit back, clear the lungs, everybody. I don't care where you are today. It doesn't matter. I'm going to say anything. Let's have a chorus of people. Wherever you are, I need you to stand upon the highest ledge possible, arms to the sky, and shout, Shut up
and give me murder. Murder.
Let's do this, Jimmy. What do you
say?
Let's go on a trip, shall we?
Yeah.
We're going to Indiana.
Hey.
Ho ho, Indiana here. We're going to, this is northern Indiana, like very tip top, up near Lake Michigan there, you know, way up there. About an hour and 15 minutes to Chicago. If you go to the west, 5 hours all the way down to Cynthiana, Indiana, which was our last Indiana episode. Much stranger things. That was a wild episode. And that was all the way down in the southern part. Small population here, not a big place. 1,954 people in the whole
town.
Tiny little place here. Median household income, little above the national average, $64,063. And the median home price, a little bit less than the national average.
Is that right?
It was $199,600.
How about this?
Pretty close to the water, maybe a hidden gem. Who knows? We'll see here. So, or just a bleak part of Indiana. We don't know. So the town is Trail Creek, Indiana, here that we're going to. Now, Trail Creek became incorporated in 1924, but it wasn't known as Trail Creek at that point. It was known as Roeskyville.
What?
R-O-E-S-K-E-Y-ville. Roeskyville.
That's gross.
Yeah, well, there was a pair of brothers named the Roesky brothers, and that's why they called it that. There was only 150 people at that time. So it was a very, tiny little crossroads of a place here. In the road, basically, they completed the Michigan Road, which opened northwest Indiana to settlers back in 1831. So the road went through what was basically forest, and so people could get to this place and get to up here. So in 1834, a guy built a dam across Trail Creek and, got some water going in a certain way and all that kind of shit. Then he built a sawmill and he sold it to some German immigrants, the Roeskys. So that's how that's how it became Roeskyville because of this. So
what a an ugly, gross last name.
It's a tough one. It's a it's very strong and sturdy. Roesky. Sounds like Roesky could, pick up like a steel beam, throw it over his shoulder and carry it to you and drop it on the ground, but maybe not the most attractive man. I see hair coming out of moles is what I see for some reason.
And a protruding forehead.
Probably, yes, a very Neanderthal forehead. I don't know why.
Eyebrow ridge, a solid one.
Strange for some reason, but yeah, they had the Roesky brickyards and all that kind of shit. The site of the brick factories is now the Michigan Fish and Game Club. So, because they had them right on the lake. They had brick factories on the lake, so you could put them on a shit on a boat and sail it out.
Oh, that makes sense.
But
yeah.
Now instead they have, it's by the water, so now it's like nice. So yeah, they, now there's apparently, a thriving industry and plant producing economical building materials. That's what it says.
Plant producing.
Plant producing. Whatever. Okay. Reviews of this town.
There we go.
There's a few of them here. Here's 5 stars.
Yeah.
They love it. I live in a small town. It's quiet and peaceful. Sounds like it's going to be a poem, right? Like the next line's going to rhyme or some shit. Everyone knows everybody, which makes a safe neighborhood. Everybody watches over each other property and immediate reports suspicious behavior.
Okay. That's annoying.
Over each other's and immediately. They just trail off the end of words.
Yeah.
it was bothering me. 3 stars. There are a few abandoned lots throughout the area, but mostly occupied lots, even if they aren't the most beautiful looking ones. So most of them, there's not a lot of abandoned places. Most of the houses have people in them, even if they're shitholes, is what they're saying. They're occupied shitholes.
Even the trash, we occupy.
I mean, it's occupied. It looks like shit because nobody's keeping it up, but there's people living in there. Okay, good. That's terrific. 3 stars here. Mm-hmm. Michigan City, because that's nearby, Michigan City's crime rate typically fluctuates. Some days it's pretty decent, and other times it hits an all-time low, just like it would anywhere else. What are you talking about? Some days there's crime. Some days there's not. Some days it rains, and some days the sun's out. What are you talking about?
Pretty decent or none at all.
Or none at all. Other times it hits an all-time low.
Right.
Then they even said, in the end, they clarify that this was not a necessary review by saying just like it would anywhere else. Well, then it's not necessary for you to tell us that, you fucking idiot.
What's the weird stuff here?
Oh, my God. All right. 3 stars again.
Yeah.
Again, a really perplexing person. This is why we're doing your stupid opinions, because everyone who leaves reviews, the psychology of leaving a review right away is there's something sketchy there. But
it's fascinating.
It's fascinating. Here's 3 stars. My town used to be lower on a scale of 1 to 5. However, in recent years, it has definitely improved.
So now it's higher.
Why not just say town's gotten better lately? Or the roundabout way to say that. Used to be lower on a scale of 1 to 5. Let me say something really concise and totally in a confusing fashion. Okay. While there are certain areas in Michigan City that aren't all that great, my particular neighborhood is nice, quiet, and safe. Okay. I'm already annoyed at these people from this town.
Yeah,
okay.
They're very confusing individuals.
It's a very confusing. Michigan City is confusing. So things to do, the Shelf Ice Brew Fest.
What the fuck is that?
It's an amazing beer festival held outdoors in Indiana near the blistering cold snow-covered shores of Lake Michigan. 4 big tents with 40 local and regional craft breweries, home brewers, and surprises for this year, fun snow stuff, fire pits, ice sculptures, food trucks, lots of fun people to have fun with. This is from the website.
Right, in the blistering cold. Blistering
cold.
That's as cold as it gets, right?
Blistering.
When you've got blisters from it?
Let's see. A straight jacket, local hero, and a little crazy will be on draft at the third. And is that the bands?
Those are the names of the beers.
Those are the beers. I thought they had bands
straight
playing.
Jacket beer. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Because it'll make you crazy.
Make you crazy and local hero and then a little crazy. Because, you know, they're made by the makers of you don't quite need a straitjacket yet. That's the lower alcohol content. That's the 6%. The other one's like a 9%. Straitjacket.
Gotta wait in the microbrew waters with the little crazy.
Straitjacket will have you drooling on a metal cot at some point tonight. So the other thing is the annual Trail Creek Fun Float.
Okay.
It's just.
Isn't all floating fun?
I mean, it seems fun. Join the Northwest Indiana Paddling Association. That exists.
Oh, they got a whole association.
You never heard of the NIPA, Jimmy? You never heard of the NIPA? The NIPA's it's big. NIPA's big. And our partners, the Trail Creek Watershed Partnership, for the 14th annual Trail Creek Fun Float. Starting at the Washington Park boat ramp, paddlers will exit the marina into Trail Creek and paddle upstream to Friendship Gardens. Take a break to stretch your legs, then head back out on the marina to finish your trip.
Hey.
That's the festival.
That's it.
That's it. And there's a one note. There is a parking fee to enter the park. So it does cost you money to float. So
cost you money, and then you got to paddle upstream.
Upstream.
Jesus Christ. Why don't we start there and come back here?
That's what I'm saying. And we won't need as many breaks to stretch our legs.
Right. Let the water do the work.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, guys.
What are we doing? How much paddling do we want to do here? It is the Paddling Association.
I had two straitjackets. I'm not ready for a paddle.
It's not the floating association. It's the paddling association. That's right. Why. If it was the Northwest Indiana Floating Association, NIFA, that's a different organization, Jimmy. All right. That said, let's talk about a murder, everybody.
Let's do it.
Multiple murder in this case.
Oh.
Let's talk about a lady first.
Yeah.
Ladies, here's one for you. This is Hilma. Her name is Hilma. H-I-L-M-A.
Huh.
Her last name should be Roski.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hilma Roski. Hilma Marie Witte. W-I-T-T-E. Witte. Okay. She goes by Marie because Hilma is a name that no one has ever used.
That's a terrible name. That sounds like a fucking town in Louisiana on the swamp.
That sounds like, well, there's Homa. They have Homa.
That's why. God damn it.
Hilma sounds like a German woman born in 1904.
Yeah.
Like someone who's, you would say, like, my great grandma Hilma.
Yeah.
Like Hilma, you'd be like, I don't know. She's a giant German lady. Who knows?
And she cooks and makes me eat it.
Oh, man. Just constant sauerkraut.
Yeah.
Doesn't even go on anything. Just a plate of it.
Family recipes. Just clumps of sauerkraut. You
plates
eat it
of,
with your hand.
That's all it does. Right on the table. No plate. Like my grandmother would whip out the polenta and pour it on the table. And you'd be like, what are we, barbarians? Let's use a plate.
What are we going to do now?
Going to scoop this up before it fucking leaks off the table? So Hilma Marie Witte is born April 20th, 1948. 420. Mm-hmm. 420 chick.
Yeah.
She's born in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
But she gets around a little bit. She ends up in Indiana by way of Florida at some point.
Oh.
Her family ends up in Florida. Her half-sister here, Regina, she says, quote, my birth father ran a nudist camp in Delray, Florida.
Is that right?
Yeah. So think about
ran it.
In the 50s, we're talking.
Yeah.
So this is nowadays a nudist camp. Nobody gives a shit about that. In the 50s, that was aberrant behavior. Like you were wild in the 50s if you were doing nudist shit. That was like, wow, mind blown. Marijuana cigarettes and jazz band type shit right there. I don't know what the hell these people are doing.
With your
tits out, goddamn beatniks. Beatnik with your tits out. She said, we walked around nude all the time, but as a child, I never felt uncomfortable.
That's the most uncomfortable you should be.
Yeah, but if you're a kid, little kids don't give a shit. They can't wait to be nude. They're ripping their diapers off. You're like, no, put that on. I don't want to clean shit up. What are you doing? So I guess if you just never teach them shame, I guess. I don't know. I guess you wouldn't
never
have any.
Never teach them clothes, yeah.
I don't know. But whatever the case is here, that's how they grew up.
Blue Lagoon kids felt weird about putting clothes on.
That's
later,
what I mean.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So
who knows?
We don't know. But that's the environment, a Florida nudist camp that these girls grew up in. So Marie is a, you know, different kind of chick anyway. So her mom is Margaret Marcy. She goes by O'Donnell. So Marcy, she's born in 1927. We'll talk about that. But we'll talk more about her mom plenty later. But Marie finds herself a husband here.
Yeah.
She finds herself a husband named Paul. Now, Paul Witte is his name. Paul is older than her, about 10 years older than her, 11 years older than her. He worked in the steel industry and was also a volunteer firefighter.
How does he feel about clothes?
Well, I think he wears them. He wears them. Yeah. He's a clothes guy. If we have clothes people and non-clothes people, he's on the clothes. He's on the clothed side of the fence.
Yeah.
So, but this is the thing. That's later on, because in the beginning, I feel like he wasn't so into clothes because they met at the father's nudist camp.
Holy.
When she was 15, Jimmy. So.
Oh, boy.
He's a 26-year-old man at a nudist camp walking around with his dick and balls flopping everywhere. In the Florida sun, by the way, which seems crazy.
That cock is freckled.
Everyone just stroking their cock. Just sunscreen. Jeez. Just putting sunscreen on. Really got to work it into the skin. You know what I mean?
You gotta hold that banana boat up real high
Christ.
When people see you.
My God. So,
don't worry.
Walking around with his 26, 27-year-old balls flopping all over the place.
Yeah. His SPF 30.
And he's like, cool. There's a naked teenager. There's a naked sophomore in front of me.
Oh, my God. This is so weird.
Hey, how you doing? Oh, your dad runs the place. That's great. I'd love to meet him. So here you got her dad and some steel worker with their cocks out. shaking each other's hands, going, I'd love to date your naked 15-year-old. How's that sound? And everyone's okay with this. This is all fine with everyone.
This is how you get on a podcast about murder.
This is how you do it,
yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah.
If you'd like to, if that's what you're going for, you got. Mm-hmm. This is what I mean. You need to put the extra effort in because this is fucking crazy.
Murder will touch your life in one way or another.
You can't just be normal and commit a murder. You have to be this. So,
holy.
Paul's sister said about Marie, quote, when I first met Marie, hopefully with clothes on, I'm just going to interject here. When I first met Marie, I thought her tits were great. When I first met Marie was just before they got married. She's not what I imagined that my brother would marry. She was loud and nobody, at least in my family. She was loud and nobody, at least in my family, was impressed with her.
Oh, nobody was impressed with
her. Nobody's impressed with her. So she's just a loud, maybe because she's 15. Maybe that's right. Why. Maybe if you went out.
Impressive.
They blame her for not being like having better social skills at 15 rather than blaming a grown man who fucking does steel work for bringing a 15-year-old over. Hi, I met a nude 15-year-old. Here she is. Oh, I don't know. I expected her to be more, you know, expected her to play pinochle better. What the fuck do you want from her? She's 15.
How do you bring a 15-year-old to family gatherings as a 26-year-old?
With clothes on, hopefully. It's much weirder to bring a naked 15-year-old over. At least if she's clothed, you know, you can say something. But
as a 26-year-old, you can't bring a 15-year-old to your,
your
family gatherings and be like, this is my girlfriend.
Who wouldn't feel weird about that? Like, right. I would feel That's real weird creepy. About that yeah. shit. So in 1964, they get married, and he's 27, she's 16.
Jesus Christ.
So, yeah, I mean, this is... Wow, out of bounds, man. I don't even know. This is unhinged shit right here.
It's really not that long ago for that to be fucking acceptable.
That is crazy. 64? I don't know. Kennedy just got shot. A lot of things were going on, man. I don't know. People didn't know what to do. People had their dicks out around kids, and they didn't know what to do with
Elvis's
life.
Elvis's wife was real young too.
That's
so
what
whatever.
I mean. Jerry Lee Lewis had already married his cousin who was 12
That's
or something. So,
much. So
it's a lot.
Jesus.
It's the 14, whatever she was. So in 1965, they welcomed their first son into the world here.
And he's getting her pregnant.
Absolutely. Why else do you marry a naked teenager except to impregnate them?
Those tubes are too new.
Oh, they're brand new. They're still got that new tube smell to them. All pink and everything, you know. She's still got that new uterus smell. It's just
fuck.
Kid comes out clean. So he's born in 1965. And then in 1970, they have another son named John, who doesn't go by John, though. They call him, and everyone calls him, Butch.
Oh, so I was going to say Jack.
Nope, Butch. That's what I mean. Why not just name him Butch? So Eric and Butch is a name. It's not even a nickname.
Yeah,
Butch is a name. Just call him Butch. So Eric and Butch here, Butch being 5 years younger. Now, one of the family members said, of the children, Eric was more of a sportsman. He had dad's favor. He was sort of the golden child. Butch came along, and he's a mama's boy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it goes, which is normal. That's a lot of...
I wouldn't pick that name to be the mama's boy.
Well, maybe that's why they called him Butch, just to...
Yeah, it's a reverse nickname.
To try to toughen him up a little. Oh, yeah, Butch. Yeah, come on. He's hanging on his mom's leg, hiding behind
her. Stop crying, Butch.
Yeah. Put some clothes on, Butch. Jesus Christ.
That's a sentence he never said to a guy named Butch. Yeah. Stop crying.
Stop crying and let go of your mommy's dress, Butch. You don't hear that a lot, really.
No. It's mostly bitch.
It's more like, come on, Butch, yard time. That's what you hear, Mort. Yard time. Let's go.
Let's go, Butch. Wreck time.
After you hear pling of a clang of a nightstick across bars. Lights out, Butch. So now they are apparently at different parenting styles here. The Butch and Eric described their father as being a very strict authoritarian.
Okay.
Which, when his penis is out, you're going to listen. That's all I'm going to say. If he's nude, you're listening. So now they said Eric said he had a lot of good memories of his dad, but at the same time, Paul would also beat the shit out of him if he made any little mistake.
Really?
Which also kind of was what people did back then. There was a there's a limit of, you know, a smack or a hit on the ass that was acceptable back then, as far as, you know, not an all out beating, you know, but
there's a
child abuse was mild child abuse was grain of salt.
Strict authoritarian and fucking child abuse.
And yeah, he would beat the kid up if he did anything wrong, which was an issue. Paul would work. He'd do the steel work and the and volunteer fire. And Marie was a homemaker. She stayed home with the kids, you know, two little boys. You got to keep an eye on them. So according to the family here throughout the 70s, they all complained that she, quote, kept a messy house. Not a good housekeeper, which with two little boys, too, it is difficult because they will make a mess. They will make messes. So they said that later on, though, after her father died, after Marie's father died, Marcy, her mom, moved in with the with them in the late 70s, and so that she kept the house clean. Like, at that point, at that point, he didn't even mind Paul because he was like, holy shit, I come home, fucking house is clean. Wow, yeah, stay as long as you like. You know, he was thrilled.
Keep Marcy.
He was thrilled with it. He's like, this is terrific. But Marie, not so thrilled with Paul.
No.
No, Marie keeps making comments to her family, especially her mom, on a daily basis of her desire to be away from Paul. She'd like to leave here. He had been physically abusive to her and and both sons. So they're like, he's kind of beating the shit out of all of us. But she told her mom that she thought any kind of property settlement in a divorce where she'd basically be fucked. She'd have nothing. Yeah. She'd have nowhere to go. And then financial problems arise as well, which adds tension to a good relationship. Oh, never mind one where someone wants out of it on a daily basis. So
you're punching me in a house we can't even afford.
This is crazy. Yeah, you need to. You got to mortgage your punches better, is what it is. Yeah, you want to slap someone around, you at least got to pay the bills, and then still don't slap anyone around. But
you can't punch me in the dark because they shut the lights off. Yeah. That's not cool at all.
Maybe that's her strategy. Yeah. You make it dark so he can't see anyone to abuse them. I don't know.
That's adding injury to insult.
This is crazy, man. This sucks. So by summer of 1981, it really comes to a head as Marie and Paul took out a loan to buy some furniture.
Okay,
they took out a loan. Now, Marie used the furniture money for, quote, other purposes. Don't know what those other purposes are, but if you borrow money to buy furniture from like a take out a loan from like a bank to buy furniture and don't buy furniture, that's other person's going to be real pissed. That's like junkie behavior. So Paul was really fucking mad, and he was pissed at the furniture place saying, Marie, call them. When the fuck is the furniture going to be delivered? He thought she bought the furniture, and she told him, yeah, Paul, I bought the furniture. I don't know where it is. I'll call tomorrow. Don't worry. So he's doing steel work, and she's at home not buying furniture, spending the money on something else. And now she's coming to a point where she's kind of fucked because he's getting mad. Like, I'm going to go in there and kick that salesman's ass. He said the furniture would fucking be here, and it's not here. This is bullshit.
At some point, you got to come home and sit down on a sofa. And if it never materializes, oh, boy.
So Marie's either got to get real handy real quick and start learning how to make something to sit on, or she's got to figure out something else here. Because this is, especially if you have a nude, abusive steel worker coming at you, like, I don't feel like.
Hope you don't got a glass jaw, darling.
He's going to be, I don't think he's going to be reasonable, and he would demand to know when the furniture is going to be delivered. So Marie at that point said, I got to get rid of Paul, and I could divorce him, but like I said, financial settlement won't be that great. I'll just kill him. Okay, that'll be easier.
Is that right?
That's much easier. So she began lacing his food with poison.
In the interim.
The look on your face just now. Jimmy opened his mouth to speak and then just cocked his head like, I don't even know what to say about that.
All she has to do is buy the sofa.
Nope, it's easier to lace his food with rat poison and Valium. That's a more reasonable approach on this show.
Holy shit.
Wow. Now, he did make her a child bride and then abuse her. So, I mean, I can understand her being upset.
I can see her side,
But holy shit. So she thought he was allergic to Valium And also, obviously, rat poison is rat poison. So he was, she was like, I'll cover my bases here.
Double whammy.
Double whammy. So he was doing that. Nothing was happening, though.
No?
No, he's fine. She's like, what the fuck with this guy?
Just clears his sinuses?
Yeah, he's like, man, I feel great. He wakes up. He's like, I'm going to go to work nude today. I just feel confident. So Marie then talks to her son, Eric, who's 15 years old at this point, and she's like, need to kill your dad. Yeah, you
old
should be
to marry, you can murder.
You should be nude and married by now. What the fuck, you know? So she's like, all right, you should do it because you're a kid.
Okay.
That'd be much better than me doing it, obviously, because I'm an adult. They'd be mad at me for it. You get away with it.
You'll do less time.
Well, he goes, well, how the hell should I kill dad? That's crazy. Yeah. I should kill dad. And she goes, well, either shoot him or you could bludgeon him with a hammer. Those are a couple of good options. She said, if you're a juvenile, if you get caught, you'll get a much lesser penalty than me, and you'll probably get away with it even because you're a kid. So Eric kept saying no, 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 no. And while he's saying no, she's continuing the poison regimen that she's giving him over the over the time here. And then finally, September 1st, 1981, the furniture has come to a head, and Paul is taking a nap in the bed, by the way, not on the couch. Okay. No, he's actually on a couch. So he's got a comfy enough couch to take a nap on. That's not
fall
bad.
Sleep on, yeah.
But he could be sleeping on a new couch, and he's not. So he's taking a nap. This is in, by the way, in Beverly Shores, Indiana,
okay,
which is nearby here. It's just to the west of that. So it's this day that Marie said, Eric, you have to shoot your dad. I'm sorry.
Get it. Let's do it.
You got to pull your weight here. So Eric said no. Then Marie said, well, if you don't kill your father, I'll kill myself. And then what are you going to do with no mother and you're stuck here with that abusive nude asshole all by yourself? Huh? What about that?
I mean, it doesn't sound like she's bringing much to the table anyway.
That's what she says. Hey, everybody. Just going to take a quick break from the show to tell you a little bit about the safest sponsor that's ever been, Simply Safe.
Oh, SimplySafe.com. SimpliSafe.com.
Springtime's coming here. So you got the spring, you got fresh air, fresh starts, and you clean your house. That's all fresh. It's also the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe home security. Make sure your newly cleaned, nice house is secure. That's important.
Well protected, yeah.
It's the only security system that Jimmy and I will use, and we recommend it highly. Sure. We both have it on not only our studios, our houses, anything we have that needs protection. Simply Safe is the way to go. It's so easy to install that even we can do it. You guys will love it because you'll feel secure. You will not be small town murdered in your own home is what it is if you have Simply Safe, because they're going to protect you. They're trusted by experts. It was named the best home security systems for 2024 by U.S. News and World Report, and Newsweek awarded Simply Safe the best customer service in home security. Simply Safe has given us and our many listeners real peace of mind, and I want you to have it too. We want you to feel good. Get 20% off any new Simply Safe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplysafe.com/small. That's SimplySafe, SimpliSafe.com/small. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
Now back to the show.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
So Eric's like, well, I don't want you to kill yourself. And then she said, well, I'm leaving the house and I will not return until you kill your father. So you're motherless no matter what until you kill your father. That's what she says. Thanks, Mom. Bye. So she leaves the house, says, I'll be back when he's dead. Mm-hmm. So she later on called Eric and said, did you shoot your father yet? Like, did you take out the garbage? Did you shoot your father yet? Did you mow the lawn?
Did you do your chore?
Yeah, mow the lawn, clean your room, shoot your father. What the fuck? How many times do I have to tell you?
Grandma's cleaned the whole house.
Yeah, he said, I can't do it. I can't kill my father. I don't want to shoot him. And she said, I'm not coming home unless he's dead. So later on that day, the Beverly Shores Police Department get a frantic call from Marie saying that she arrived home to find her husband dead from a gunshot wound.
Oh my God.
Yeah. The detective said Paul had apparently been asleep on the couch, his old couch, when he was shot in the head. The officers arrived on the scene and found that it's a big old hole because he was shot with a .357 Magnum at close range. That is a big gun to close range into somebody's head. So they find out the shooter is 15-year-old Eric. Mm. And they're like, what the fuck? And he said, I tripped on the carpet and it went off.
What?
That's what he said.
That's the end.
I tripped on the rug and I almost fell and I squeezed and I accidentally.
You know how they say don't run with scissors? Also, don't walk with a gun.
It's way worse with a .357. That's so. And the police detective said it wasn't a well kept house at all by any stretch of the imagination. It wasn't impossible for what he said to have happened. Someone tripping. So we keep an open mind.
Okay.
I mean, he said it's a mess. I could see tripping in here. So now Butch, John at the time, and of course Marcy, who was also in the house, who lives there.
Wow.
They said they didn't see anything. They just heard a gunshot.
They didn't
know anything. The cops said the angle of the gunshot didn't look accidental. Just the angle of it looked real on purpose, they said.
It was a down shot.
Yeah. So they tried to speak with Eric, and his mother said she wanted a lawyer. You're not speaking to my son unless he has a lawyer present. He later spoke with detectives in the presence of both Marie and a lawyer. So between the two of them, he's not going to get to answer much here. He repeated the story. He found the gun in his home and brought it to his father to ask about the safety mechanism.
Okay.
His father was asleep on the couch. As he approached him, he tripped on the rug. The gun went off. He's horrified. He feels terrible. Terrible.
If only I knew how to operate the safety.
That's why. If only he was awake. Yeah. So then they talked to Marie, and here is one of the police detectives here, Officer James Bonfield. He collected evidence at the home. He said, Hilma Whitty's demeanor was calm and casual. As we talked, she interjected laughter into the conversation.
What?
Yeah. He said, I remember that she giggled as she talked. She didn't appear to be very upset with the entire incident that night.
Well, I mean, it's a trip. It's hilarious.
Isn't this so weird? I mean, you trip, you fall.
Sometimes accidents.
Guys,
you know?
Feel free to take your clothes off, by the way, if you're more comfortable. We don't mind. So they talked to her about 3 hours after the death, and she's talking to, this is a tape-recorded conversation with the police. Yeah. She's giggling while telling people she didn't know whether her husband was sleeping on his back or his side because he rolled around a lot. She giggled. She
really tosses and turns.
She giggled twice as she talked about her husband's guns, according to the transcription. She said she didn't allow them in the house. She also said she was out of the house briefly on a shopping trip. When she returned, Eric told her that he had accidentally shot his father. So, yeah, like we said, he gave his description. Now, the guy who did the autopsy, the doctor George Azar here, he says that Woody was killed by a gunshot that fired into his head from a gun held against the top of his head.
Oh.
Like, yeah, pop, like that. That is a different type of thing.
You tripped right into pop.
Right, and just bang, right on his head. Yeah. Perfect, I mean, it's a perfect storm, you know? Immaculate,
the immaculate
357 shot. The only foreign substance found in his body was Tylenol. Uh-huh. That's it. So she had stopped poisoning him by then. The cop says, quote, I told Marie and told the attorney, you'll see me again someday because he's getting by with this, meaning Eric, and he'll do this again. So trust me, you're going to see me again. Like, we think he did it. We don't have the evidence, but we all know what the fuck happened here. And next time he shoots somebody again, I'll be here to clean it up. So
it could be you. And also, if you get away with murder, you'll probably try murder again.
Especially if mom's getting you out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So they collect, Marie collects a small life insurance policy, and Marie and the boys move in with Paul's widow stepmother. Okay. Not his real mother. His widowed.
So his mom died, or they got divorced, remarried, and then dad died, and now we've got stepmom.
We've got stepmom who has been around for a long time, apparently since he was a child. So it's not just like some lady from recently.
Yeah. She's a mainstay.
She's a mainstay in this whole thing. She's in her early 70s. Her name's Elaine. Elaine Whitty. So they moved to her house at 320 Johnson Road in Trail Creek. So. Mm-hmm. By the way, the kids' accounts of the shooting of dad couldn't be more different. Later on, these are the accounts they'll give. Okay, this is crazy. John said that he saw the whole thing.
Oh.
And this is Butch. He said, Eric calmly stood over his father's sleeping body and pulled the trigger. And he did say acting under our mother's orders. Uh-huh. Eric said he was enraged because his father had beaten him an hour earlier.
Okay.
This is once we get past the accident shit, which will pop up later. For now, police have just said it's an accident. It's fine. So John said he saw Eric do it. That's what Butch said. Eric said Butch could not have seen it because he was locked in a bedroom in another part of the house when it happened. Eric said he does not remember the exact moment he pulled the trigger, but he remembers standing over his father's body, aiming the gun and cocking it. The next thing he remembers is the flash of the gun and his father's body jerking into the air, he said. Uh-huh. Jerking into the air. Eric said he laid down the gun and ran out of the house. Now, Butch said that he was the one who had been beaten that night, not Eric.
Oh.
He said Paul got mad at him for letting his pet bat get loose in the house. What is it with weird flying fucking pets that on this show? What is going on? What's happening?
Touches your life when your pet has wings.
What is going on with this? Nude people and bats? This is fucking crazy.
And if I, as a father, if I have a child that has a pet bat and that shit gets out, I'll beat you
too.
I
will beat your little ass for that. When they get the bat, I'll go, listen, you can have the bat, but if it ever gets out, you're going to get a throttling like you have no idea. Like, steal yourself for it now. I will kick your little ass. So, now, Eric says that John didn't have a pet bat, even though
what?
John said he had a pet bat and it got out and he got beat for it. Eric said he didn't even have a pet bat. I don't know what's happening. Eric said that Paul's anger that night had to do with a dog. Paul raised teams of sled dogs. This gets weirder by the minute.
Sled dogs in Indiana.
He became angry because Eric hadn't adequately trained one of the dogs, so he beat him. That's Eric's story. So it's either a pet bat or not a trained dog. I don't know what's going on. So they move in with Elaine, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, over the next 3 years, they live with Elaine, and everything seems to be going well on the surface. Elaine and Marie get along. After high school, Eric joins the Navy. His father had been in the Navy as well, so he's going to go into the Navy. On the surface, everything's great.
Yeah.
In reality, Marie is discussing with her sons various ways in which they might kill Elaine. Let's kill Elaine. What do you say? Come on, kids.
We need Elaine to go away now.
You know what? That really brought our family closer together, our last murder. Let's do another.
Yeah. And she reminds me of Paul, so let's get rid of this.
What the hell? This is like, she's like the Manson family, this fucking lady.
Truly.
She often, by the way, over these 3 years, she often forged Elaine's signature on Social Security checks and cashed them. So they discussed poisoning, strangling. We could strangle her.
Poisoning worked well.
An older lady, they might just think she had a heart attack, they're thinking. So maybe we poison her. We could strangle her. That's a possibility. Make it look like a break-in. You know what we could do?
What's that?
This is one of the solutions. We could push her out of a window and say she fell out.
It's true.
She just fell out of a... Push her out of a window? What the fuck kind of a murder plot is that? He said, we could shoot her, too. You never know, right?
So shoulder in her from the second story?
That's all, just
I think
bump
that's
going
to break her hip.
You know, something will happen. On several occasions, Marie put poison in her food and drink as well and went like, eh, and nothing happened. She was a terrible poisoner. Not good at it at all.
She doesn't know how much it takes.
No. So finally, January 8th, 1984... the day before this, Elaine told her mother to fill out a withdrawal form. Marie told her mother, Marcy, to fill out a withdrawal form to remove $6,000 from Elaine Whitty's bank account. Mm-hmm. We're going to steal $6,000 from her. Morning of January 8th, 84, Marie wakes John up, wakes Butch up, who's 15 years old at this time, right, and says, you got to go kill your grandma today. Go kill grandma. Yeah. Okay, wake up. It's time to kill grandma. And he's like, I don't want to kill grandma. I'm tired. And she's like, no, you have to kill. You have to kill grandma.
He's 15 now?
He's 15 now, John Butch.
Wasn't he 15 when he killed his dad?
That was Eric. This is Butch.
Oh.
Eric's in the Navy.
Eric's, when you're 15, that's when you become a man.
That's when you become, And when you're 13, you have a bar mitzvah if you're Jewish. Yeah. If when you're 15, if you're whatever the fuck. When you're a witty, it's time to murder somebody. It's time to get nude and murder. So he says, quote, my mom said I could strangle her or use my crossbow. It was up to me.
What the fuck is happening? Didn't she give two options to Butch, too?
Yeah, at least she's giving you options. She's not unreasonable.
You got choices.
So Marcy, Marie's mom, later said, Elaine was going to die and it was going to look like an accident. That's it. Okay. That's how it was going to be. So they talked about this. By the way, they discussed this in the presence of Butch's girlfriend as well. Just they did that. They all met up at a local motel to discuss the plot with her mom, too. Marcy showed up, Butch, his girlfriend. It was a real meeting of the minds at the motel to discuss
everybody
this.
Everybody gets an opinion in here. It's a real brainstorm.
Yeah, that's all. And in the end, Marcy said, quote, and Marie said that Elaine was going on a vacation, and she said for a long vacation, and Butch said she may never come back. So that's what they're going to tell people. So what he does is he tells her, you know, make it look like an accident. Then Marie tells her mom to go to Elaine's house and fend off any inquiries if any friends or neighbors come over, while she and John will dismember and destroy the body.
Oh my God, we're gonna get rid of it.
Yes. So John has a medieval style crossbow that he shoots her with in the rib cage.
Oh my!
While she's sleeping in bed, he comes up.
Oh God!
And shoots her in the rib cage with a medieval crossbow. Could this get weirder, or is it just, am I out of my fucking mind here?
Jesus.
Oh, want it to get weirder and grosser?
Yeah.
So then they're going to use, as this from the court documents, quote, using various instruments, including a hammer, chisel, deep fat fryer, saw, and microwave, the family then dismembered Elaine and disposed of her body in various ghastly ways.
It has evolved from make it look like an accident to we'll just make her disappear.
We'll make her disappear. Say she went on vacation and she never came back. That's the plan.
We'll microwave her ass.
This is bonkers. So they said that her body was stuffed in a garbage can in an upstairs bedroom at first, just to, you know, till they figure it out. There was a bloody, this is what Marcy will say later, that there was a bloody chest stain on her blue night clothes. Mm-hmm. So she got shot. She was wearing a fucking nightgown in bed, and she got shot with this shit. Mom here, this is Marcy, Marie's mom. She said that she lined the basement freezer with shelf paper, you know, to protect it, like shelf paper that goes under your glasses on your shelves to protect in case there's water on it, while her daughter and grandson carried a circular saw, hammers, a chisel, knives, heavy plastic, and plywood into the bedroom.
Oh, God.
Are they in the Gambino family? What the fuck is going on? This family would make a great mafia family, I gotta say.
Truly.
They have no fucking heart. So they worked continually through this week. They spent a week doing this because it's hard, you know, and they had other shit to do.
Yeah.
Now, everybody at the family would stay at a hotel while she would stay home and work on this, okay? Mm-hmm. Marcy would later say, I saw them carrying bags down to the freezer. Bloody towels, rugs, bloody tools. They cut her up with knives and a chainsaw, used a trash compactor and garbage disposal to destroy some of the meaty parts, basically, that they could have no bones and shit. They also used acid to dissolve some of her bones.
Oh, boy.
This is crazy.
70-something-year-old woman.
74 at this point in time.
Oh, boy.
And Marcy will say this quote, and here we go again, Jimmy, it never fails us. Yeah. Never fails us. Quote, Marie's contention right along was that if there was no body, no evidence, there could be what, Jimmy?
No crime. Nobody, no crime.
Why does it keep happening?
Hey. Because people are fucking stupid on this show. That's why. Murderers are stupid. To say, I could do this, I'll get away with it. That's stupid. Nobody, no crime. Gonna shoot my husband while he is nude. Hey. Nobody, no crime.
I'll shoot his stepmom, too.
And then I'm going to shoot his stepmama, too. Hey, ho. What
Holy
the fuck?
Christ.
Nobody, no crime.
They can just...
What the fuck, man? I'm beside myself right now. I don't know what to say.
The amount of work that this is taking, too,
it's crazy.
Out of control.
So whatever they had left of her after the acid and the garbage disposal and all of that shit, they stored in garbage bags in a freezer. Okay. So over the next 4 months.
Gruesome.
She tries to figure out ways to get rid of this. She asks her friends,
hey,
can you get rid of a body part? Like, if I give you a bag of meat, can you just bury it deep into your like woods or something and... Literally, she's asking people this.
She's like Andy Dufresne sprinkling a handful of dirt in the yard.
A little bit here, a little bit there. This is crazy.
She's going to tuck a little bit of stepmom in her girdle and just go shake her out at the park.
That's right. So Eric, who's in the Navy, enlists his Navy friend to help him.
What the fuck?
Let's bring as many people into this conspiracy as humanly possible.
Tell everybody except the cops.
So they bring Douglas Menkel into this mix here. He's 21 at the time. He's Eric's Navy buddy. Him and Eric travel to Indiana. Yeah. And then on the way back to San Diego where they're stationed, they're going to get rid of the body parts. That's the plan.
We can throw some out the window here, a little out the window there.
They picked up a cooler filled with body parts.
Oh, God.
And dropped them off along the way back to California. Hey, come back with me to Indiana. How come? I can meet my family. You know what? Also, we're going to dispose of my grandmother's body parts along the way. What do you say? We'll drive back.
Grab the other end of this Coleman and throw it in the bag.
As if that's not a hell drive enough without having to dispose of body parts. So they did this shit. It contained the ice chest. Menkel will later say the ice chest contained various black garbage bags. He'll later be asked if he noticed anything unusual about the bags, and he said, quote, yes, it had a lot of white worms on it and some small flying black bugs.
God, Jesus, gross.
Maggots and fucking flies from the maggots. So they've developed into flies. That's how long this has been going on.
That's a guy that's in the Navy.
He's
and
in the
he's
Navy.
Saying white worms and black flying bugs.
Let's hope he's not in charge of. He's mopping. Let's hope a lot of things. Let's hope he's not like in the computer systems or doing anything with like GPS or coordinates or missiles or anything like that. So
that man took an igloo full of flies and maggots and
threw them out along the way.
Drove around the country with it
over 2,500 miles or so, sprinkled Elaine along the way. So. May 1984, five months have gone by now. Finally, Elaine's neighbors are tired of, like, trying to, they've asked where she is. Oh, she's on vacation. Yeah. We don't know when she'll be back. So in May of 84, one of her neighbors contacts the police department. And the police said, quote, the neighbor indicated he had seen Elaine out in the yard tending to her flowers, but now he hadn't seen her for a period of months. So the police perform a welfare check. Marie answers the door. Hi, how you doing? Oh, Maria, she went on a long vacation. She's been her whole life waiting for this vacation, and
Elaine
she's traveling.
She waited for her 70s to really see the world.
Well, she can do it now, so she's ready to do it. The cop said she said Elaine was traveling, that she was visiting Marie's son, who was in the Navy, and that she didn't know when she'd be coming back. So she told a morbid truth there.
Yikes.
Oh, yeah. So holidays, birthdays, all sorts of times pass when you would normally see her.
Yeah.
Police inquire every once in a while, hey, Elaine home yet? And Marie would go, nope, not home yet.
Huh.
Sorry. That's it. So local police finally contact the state police and go, maybe you can press something here.
Yeah.
And the one cop who was involved in the state police was the same detective who talked to them about Dad.
Uh-huh.
And he recognized the name, and he said, hold on a second here. someone got shot while they were sleeping in Marie right. Whitty's house. I don't like that at all. So they ran Elaine's VIN numbers on her car and learned that Marie had recently sold Elaine's car.
Oh.
Yeah, she sold it. Phone records showed no long-distance calls coming in or out of Elaine's home also. So she's not
checking in,
not going anywhere. And then they said, quote, bank accounts showed large withdrawals in the period of time from the beginning of January when she disappeared up until May or June of 84. She had Social Security checks that were coming in on a monthly basis, and they were still being cashed locally. So, yeah, not great at all. So they said that altogether, Marie took in Social Security checks more than $11,000 from two savings accounts and a checking account, and also stole some of her furniture as well.
Wow.
Now, when people start demanding to know where she is, Marie just takes off, grabs Butch, throws him in the car, and moves to California, where Eric is. Eric goes AWOL from the Navy to try to figure this out, which I had a friend who started half his stories with, so I was AWOL from the Navy, right? And you'd go, this is going to be a good story. You know what I mean? You know it's going to be fun if we start
out. So I was already a criminal.
Yeah. So I'm AWOL from the Navy, and these guys, he was from Philly. He was hilarious, this guy. I'm AWOL from the Navy. And he cracked me up. So that's not great. So the cops are trying to contact Marie, but then they learn that she took off with Butch. And they're like, okay. Yeah. But Marcy's left behind. So they pressure Marcy. They really put the fucking screws to Marcy. Finally, Marcy cracks and says, Elaine's dead. Okay, fine. So the cops said, quote, Marie's mother said that she had been told that Butch had accidentally shot and killed Elaine with a crossbow.
Mm.
So Marcy then tells the detectives that they're like, well, then where is she then? And they said, well, Marcy said, well, Marie and Butch dismembered her and disposed of her. And they're like, okay, this is more than an accident.
Right.
They go to California to interview Eric. Eric is confronted with his grandmother's confession. And he said, okay, fine. My mom told me that Butch killed my grandmother. Fine.
Oh, God damn it.
The cop said Marie told him it was an accident and she needed help. Eric said he told her to freeze the body until he could come home. Freeze her. I'll help you get rid of it.
Turn her to ice. I'll take care of it.
So November 7th, 84, finally, after 11 months, Marie and Butch are finally arrested in Chula Vista, California, after she cashed one of Elaine's Social Security checks. They were preparing to go to Mexico. They had all their shit.
Really?
They were going to Mexico. They were on their way out of the country. That's how they were caught. And, Marie, Eric, and Butch are charged with forgery at first.
Yeah.
Marie refuses to cooperate. Butch is 15. He gives a full confession.
I'm dumb.
Also made a statement concerning Paul's death as well, because it's not. Yeah. He says my brother killed my father because my mother told him to, by the way. Mm-hmm. Also, they said that they were asking him about the whereabouts of his grandmother. And the cop said John Whitty just blurted it all out. He said, quote, he wanted to get it off his chest and he did it voluntarily. He indicated that he had to tell someone that he could not sleep and he wanted to get it out. You know.
Oh, yeah, but that hurts. Yeah.
He's a child with a conscience, maybe. Right. That's all.
Who shot his grandmother with a crossbow. It's going to be easy to spill that. I don't want to wear that forever.
And he said, my mother was cashing her checks and she thought that she would get caught and get kicked out. So she told me we had to kill her and we tried to poison her and that didn't work. And so he said, mom said I could use my crossbow. I could strangle her. I mean, and the cops are like, holy shit. Hair blowing back on their heads there. They said, the one cop said he wanted to talk about the murder of his dad. He gave us a story about Eric that Marie had also manipulated Eric into killing Paul and that it wasn't an accident. Marie said that he had to kill his dad because she was suffering abuse by him. Also, he was threatening divorce, and if they went through a divorce, they'd be out in the street.
Yeah, also, she spent the money for the Thomasville, and now he's going to be mad.
Yeah, so then, exactly, that's the other problem. So then Eric admits it's true when police confront him with all of this, and that's when they just have the conflicting stories of, was it over a dog, a bat, who got hit, who didn't, either way, intentional. So they process Eric through the system here, and also Marcy makes a statement saying, yes, I also knew about Paul's death and all that kind of shit, so that, helps that a lot, and it's a lot. So they return them to Indiana. Uh-huh. And obviously after, by the way, the Social Security shit's federal. So
yeah, that's federal fraud.
They're being charged in San Diego and federally with all that shit and then all the murder in Indiana.
Oh, boy.
So before she gets back, the police said, when Hilma Marie gets back here, we plan to charge her with murder and attempted murder in conjunction with the death of Elaine. And we will also charge Eric with conspiracy to commit murder again in the death of Elaine, even though John was the one that pulled the trigger.
Yeah.
So they said they're also they plan to charge Marcy with attempted murder in Paul's deal, too. So they are returned to Indiana from San Diego. They're being held without bond. Eric's being held on $1 million bond.
Good Lord.
She's arraigned on account of murder and account of attempted murder. Marie is. No plea entered yet. They end up giving her a bond.
Oh.
She's not held without bond. A surety bond of $200,000 was set for her, which means she has to raise $20,000 or show proof of cash or property worth $200,000 before she can get bonded out. The prosecution didn't fight it out of concern that the defense would request a hearing on the evidence, and that would involve questioning all 45 witnesses that they lined up and basically giving away their whole case before they make it. So they were like, fine, let them do it, because they didn't think she could raise the money anyway. Like, she doesn't have this fucking money. The only way she had money was stealing. So,
and murdering people and getting
yeah,
life insurance.
So Eric is charged with conspiracy to commit murder in the death of Elaine, and he pleads guilty to that.
Really?
He's going to plead guilty. John's going to plead guilty, young Butch, to voluntary manslaughter in conjunction with Elaine's death. And he's going to also testify in the trials as well.
Fascinating.
Prosecutor states that he will ask for the death penalty for Marie.
Really?
She had children murder sleeping people for profit. This you like, if you have the death penalty in your state, that's definition of death penalty.
It's fascinating that she didn't do it and she's going to get the death penalty when the boys did. But I mean, it's please, but they probably would have been up for it too, right? Not the 15-year-old, but
that's the. I think it's they were both 15 when it happened, so you're not going to kill her children. So that's crazy. There's a big thing about a media blackout. The prosecution wants no media ever in the court at all, and the media ends up winning that battle here. Now, during the trial for Elaine, jurors in here are going to hear. They're going to hear all about Paul's murder because she pleads guilty to that.
Really?
Marie pleads guilty in Paul's death. Mm-hmm. She's fucked in that one, so she pleads guilty.
Yeah, but the other one's much more gruesome.
It is, and that's the one she thinks she can get away with because she said there's no evidence tying her to it.
Okay.
So that's very interesting. They're going to bring in the information about Paul, and they're saying that the two deaths are too similar to be coincidental.
Right.
She had a 15-year-old son murder someone while they were sleeping. That's
twice.
Jesus. So the judge agreed and allowed testimony about Paul's murder to be let in because they were so, you know,
too much.
Close.
Too much to say. Yeah.
She's convicted of forgery by the U.S. District Court in San Diego before she was returned, so she's got that over hanging over her head. Throughout the three-week-long trial, she maintained, through her defense attorney, she had nothing to do with the slaying itself. They said it was planned out and carried out by her son as well as her other son. Her two sons did it, and even her own mother. It was a triangle of bad people that were set up against her, and now they're all blaming her, you know, because she's mom. So her mom, Marcy, gets on the stand and details the dismembering process, which is a terrible thing for Marie. The cross-examination isn't about that, about the dismemberment, but all about Marie's mom and how she's a drunk. That's all it is. She repeatedly was asked whether her admitted drinking bouts affected her memory surrounding the events of that night. And she said that she did remain, quote, loaded much of the time in the weeks that followed the slaying. She said, my memory is as faulty as anyone else's, and I would not say it's from the alcohol. Okay. You remember dismemberments, though, I feel like, if it's your first. Right.
You don't know how loaded I was.
Yeah. So during she's found guilty, by the way, of killing Elaine, obviously. Her sons and mother are all testifying against her. Not good.
She has nothing to stand on.
Nope. So during the sentencing, here's the closings here. The prosecutor says, quote, we're talking about a cold, calculating, vicious conjuring of a plan and waiting until this senior citizen was at her weakest moment, lying in her bed. She, meaning Marie, has not repented. She has no remorse, and she has shown no remorse. And they're asking for the maximum sentence. I guess the death penalty isn't flying here because she didn't actually do it. So the maximum is 110 years in prison is what they're going for.
Fuck. May as well be death.
Yep. The defense in their closing said, well, they were way more lenient with the other people involved in the crime. So Marie should be lenient also. They said that, you know, they got plea agreements and all this. So the sentencing comes around. Okay. For her, this is all at once, I'll give you. For her forgery federal shit, 10 years in federal prison for that.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, then she will serve you, ma'am, may fuck off, 90 years for the murder of Elaine.
Okay.
90 years to be served consecutively with 50 years for Paul's murder.
She's got 160 years right now.
So, yeah. So far, she's got 150. 50 plus 90 plus 10.
Oh, right. Yeah. 150. Yeah.
150 years imprisonment facing her here. Her earliest parole at that point would be 2061 when she is 112 years old. So that's not good. She'll get that reduced some, though, later on. The defense attorney said, we're obviously disappointed in the verdict, but we have no animosity for anyone. We did the best we could. They said, will you appeal? We did the best we could. I mean, it just, they had both her kids and her mom was testifying against her. It looks bad. It just looks bad.
We swung back.
We really did. But man, it didn't work. They said, will you appeal? He goes, we probably will. Like, I mean, we'll find some more shit. Yeah. And his partner in the trial, the other defense attorney said, he said, quote, we had a good jury. It just, I don't know, it didn't work out.
Just not our day.
It was the jury we wanted. You know, sometimes you practice all week and then game day, you go out there, you throw an interception. It happens. It's just,
they were hungry. They wanted it more.
Got to be ready next week, any given Sunday. You know what I'm saying? So the prosecutor said he was elated with the jury's decision and will ask, he was going to ask for the maximum sentence and got it, and he wants it all to run consecutively, and he's so happy that it will. So the rest of these people sentencing, Marcy, mom here, she'll serve concurrent sentences of 5 years for assisting a criminal in the Elaine's death and 6 years on the same count in Paul's death. So she could get out in 3 years or less.
Yeah.
Okay. Menkel, the Navy friend,
who drove from Indiana to fucking California, tossing grandma out.
Being the most disgusting Johnny Appleseed in the history of the world.
Yeah.
Johnny Maggot Seed over here. He got a plea bargain, and he got a sentence of time served in the county jail while waiting to testify against Marie. They said, with your testimony, we'll give you time served since
he handled body parts.
You came in well after the fact, though. You are a psychopath, and we're concerned about that. We're going to keep an eye on you.
You're probably going to get discharged.
Think we're going to kick you out of the Navy, probably. But So Eric will serve a 4-year federal sentence for assisting in a Social Security scam. That will run concurrently with 5 years he receives in LaPorte County in the aftermath of Elaine's death. And then 20 years for killing his father.
Oh, he's in a lot of trouble.
But he could be out in 10, apparently.
Okay.
Now, John got 20 years for voluntary manslaughter. He could be paroled in 8 or 9 years because of good time awards during his stay in the jail and his youth and all that shit. So,
holy.
Yes. So this is a fucking mess. By the way, Menkel served 422 days in jail while awaiting to testify. So he did do over a year in jail.
A year and 7 days. Yeah.
Almost a year and a half.
Almost 2 years. Two months. Yeah.
That's something. A year and change anyway. So Eric is also going to get, he's got a lot of problems here. He's, obviously he did a voluntary manslaughter for his dad. Yeah. He's in there. Elaine's estate, by the way, gets assigned to a local attorney to figure out
probably,
here.
Yeah.
It's appraised to be worth $60,000, her house, but it was sold at auction for $26,750.
Oh, my God.
And they did that. And then also the sale of personal property, including a Sears upright freezer, jewelry, a hutch, and a lawnmower, netted another $837.68. A lawnmower.
$60,000 and $800 in property.
Yep. Then they deducted some fees for delinquent property taxes and damage done during a police search and all this type of shit. And then all the money in the end, $16,625.24 from everything, was given to the school fund, the state school fund. So the common state school fund.
Everything that she worked for an entire life.
Yep.
Boiled down to 16 grand.
16 grand and, getting some new kickballs down at the old playground.
Jesus.
So, 1987, Marie appeals the Paul conviction. They have to fix her sentencing. They said her sentencing is off because they sentenced her too harshly based on a bunch of legal factors that we don't have time for right now. Affirmed everything, knocked her sentence down a little bit. We'll talk about that. 1990, appeal for Elaine's case. That's affirmed. Go fuck yourself. Nobody cares about that. Now, Marcy ended up serving 6 years for her role in the murder. She did all of her time.
Right.
And then she died shortly after serving her time.
Oh, Jesus.
Which, 1996, Eric and John are both released. Eric and Butch are both sent home in 96.
Uh-huh.
2008, at the not even 40 years old, John dies from complications of diabetes.
Is that right?
Yes, it's like a curse now. They're all doing it. Eric ended up...
It's a real Stephen King book.
It is. They're all going down. This didn't happen in Maine. Eric gets married and has a family, actually. Uh-huh. Then in 2022, just last year, he dies at age 56.
Did his son kill him?
We can only hope that his son shot him while he slept on an old couch. That's all we can hope. Now, Marie remains in prison. She's in the Indiana Women's Prison here. Uh-huh. Her sentence, her projected release date, which is her earliest possible release date, is April 15th, 2027. She could be out in
four years.
4 years, everybody. And that is Trail Creek, Indiana. And one fucking hell of a story. I don't want to hear anybody saying that was bland because it goddamn wasn't. That was crazy.
That's so fucked up.
That's a fucked up story about asshole of a lady.
I really
Paul's
hope
a dick
that
too,
woman.
Wow.
Yeah. I really hope that woman does all the way to 2027, gets out and dies the fucking very
next
month.
That would be amazing.
That would be incredible.
Paul, I'll give you Paul. Yeah, maybe he was beating you, doing all this. Right. The old lady wasn't beating you, so what's your excuse for her?
Yeah,
get the fuck out of here. So there you go. There's that. If you like that show, tell the world. It helps a lot when you give a review on whatever podcast app you're listening to. It really helps the show, helps drive us up the charts. It costs you nothing but 30 seconds of your time. So thank you for doing that, and please do that. Head over to shutupandgivememurder.com. Everything Small Town Murder and Crime and Sports is there, including new merchandise. All sorts of good stuff. Tickets to live shows. Detroit, May the 5th, May the 6th in Pittsburgh. August the 12th, Chicago. Huge venue. Come and fucking see us in Chicago. Get in there. ShutUpAndGiveMeMurder.com. Keep an eye out for the new show, Your Stupid Opinions, coming out in May. Stupid reviews from all over the internet of everything you can think about. Patreon.com/CrimeAndSports is where you get all of your bonus material. Anybody $5 or above, you're going to get access to hundreds of bonus episodes to catch up on, and new ones every other week. Two new ones, as a matter of fact. This week, what you're going to get for Crime and Sports, which you get access to, owners that have done fucked up shit. So owner criminals. There's plenty of those assholes. You don't get to be a billionaire, by doing nice things.
Nice to people, yeah.
So owner criminals. And then for Small Town Murder, it's Love After Lockup time.
Oh, boy.
Finally back. Love After Lockup. We can't wait to catch you up on the last 6 months of these disastrous lives.
This group. Jesus.
Want to feel better about yourself?
Yeah.
No problem. $5 or above, we got you covered. You're going to feel great when you're done with all this.
Yeah.
That's patreon.com/crimeandsports. And you get a shout out at the end of the regular show every single goddamn week. Jimmy will mispronounce your name terribly while wanting with all of his heart to get it correct.
So
that said, you want to follow us on social media, shutupandgivememurder.com, drop down menu, links, we're in there. Links to everything, links to this, links to that, links up your ass. Let's do it. And until next week, everybody, it's been our pleasure.
Bye.
Hey, Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Small Town Murder early and ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen early and ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.